Welcome to the Light Side of the Dark Side. It's your weekly freak show here on Renegade Radio and also all the podcast catchers, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Apple, everything, everywhere you listen to podcasts. It's the Dark Mark Show. I'm Dark Mark, the goth comedian. And of course, with me, my co-host, everybody's favorite vegan heavy metal DJ, Hannah Bach.
Hello, guys.
Hi, Hannah. I know that other than things that we were discussing off the air, how are you?
You know, I can't complain. I'm still breathing. I'm alive. I haven't broke any bones. Knock on wood. How are you?
Well, good. I was just about to break some bones, but I know that last time our guest was in studio, you were supposed to be there and you were sick that day, and Santa Claus was there, and you couldn't wait for her to come back. It was such a great show, and she's such a great guest, and you guys bonded over the phone. And you know how we have adult film stars from time to time. Last year we had Ryder Skye, we had Siri Dahl, we had Alexis Allure, we had even the legendary Ginger Lynn. But here is my favorite, my personal favorite adult film star still in 2021, Ella Darling.
Oh gosh, you make me blush. Hello, thank you guys for having me back. And Hannah, it's nice to be on the show with you.
Yes. We're doing it quarantine style.
Well, Ella's joining us from Austin, Texas. So that's where basically half of LA moved to. And we're going to talk about that. But
very true.
Yeah, it's LA East. But before we get started, our sponsors really quick. We've got Audible. I've got the library behind me, the goth library behind me. But when you're in the car, you're on the road, or even if you're sitting at home, which everybody is, you know, you don't have time to just sit and read books. You got other things to do. Listen to a book. They've got everything from Shakespeare to smut. They have books on they have smutty books, Ella.
I know.
And actually, our past guest Sasha Gray, she has an erotic novel, a couple of erotic novels that she reads on there. But also whatever your, you know, all the bestsellers, all the great biographies. Now, if you go to audibletrial.com/DMS. Not only do you get a free book, you get access to all of the Audible originals, not just one. You can download a bunch of them. You can download Alien 3. You can download the version of The Sandman with James McAvoy, whatever you want. Audibletrial.com/DMS, free book, access to all the Audible originals, and a 30-day trial to Audible. You can't beat that. And Hannah, I don't know if you're still there, but I know that last time we were talking about our other sponsor, Doomy's Home Cooking. And most of the time when we talk about that, they have no idea. Did you see that face that Ella just made?
No, because I only see you guys when you talk. Let me see if I can like flip my screen. Now I can see the both of you. Now I got it.
Ella, talk about Doomy's Home Cooking and how great it is.
I love Doomy's so much. I eat meat now, but for like a decade or so, I was a vegetarian, and Doomy's was my absolute comfort food. It was so good. I think it's all vegan, or at least mostly vegan, maybe a few vegetarian options. I don't recall, but it was just always so amazing. Their chicken, they make amazing food, and it's so good. And even if you think that you hate vegetarian food, because like you're a meat eater, whatever, like, why don't you just hear me out, try it. It is some of the most amazing food. And that's not just most amazing vegetarian food, but just some of the best food I've ever eaten. They're so good.
What is your favorite dessert and what is your favorite plate from Doomy's?
You know, it's been years since I've been there, but I think I think my go-to was a fried not chicken sandwich maybe.
Yes.
And the wings were really good.
Oh, yeah, those are good.
Yeah, no, if I remember correctly, there's like just this absolutely bomb chicken sandwich, and you could get like vegan ranch. And I live in Texas again, so of course I eat ranch like it's manna, I don't know. Yeah, it's just so good. I love Doomy's. I love that they're sponsoring you guys. Hi, Doomy's. Oh, I love you.
And their jalapeno poppers are amazing. Speaking of Doomy's and Mark, and I hope Phil's listening, since we're in quarantine for my, you know, my birthday's coming up, my best friend Christiana and I decided maybe we should all meet, park in the parking lot, and just have Doomies quarantine style.
I'd be up for that. Absolutely.
All right. Awesome. Well, that's hopefully I'll be driving my new car if I get it down there.
I hope so. Well, tell your boyfriend all about that. But 1253 yeah. Vine Street on the corner of Fountain of Vine, if you're in LA. And by the way, Ella, they've expanded the chicken menu. They've jumped on the chicken sandwich bandwagon. Last time I was there, I had the chicken cordon bleu.
Oh, wow. That sounds delicious. Nice.
Better than Popeyes, Benny and all these chicken sandwiches. And they have a Mexican restaurant next door. Next mess, the biggest flautas I ever had. Next time you're in LA, we're all coming. We're all going to Doomies and we're hanging out.
Yeah, you have a double, you have like a date with us.
All right. I'm going to cash that in.
The threesome of my vegan dreams. But Doomies, I'm cooking 1253 Vine Street. Also, there's one in Culver City and one in Toronto, Canada. Sadly, not Austin, Texas yet, but I'm sure it's coming.
Oh, hey, yeah, it's a good fit.
It is a good fit.
And support your local restaurants during this quarantine because they need it. Support your artists and support your restaurants. And also, if you need a pick-me-up, get some of this Raise energy drinks.
Yeah, that makes Mark very happy in the morning. He's wide awake, and I'm like, what?
Oh, yeah. I was texting her like a fiend yesterday morning. She's like, I'm still sleepy. I'm like, I just had a raise. I'm all excited. This, you can't get it at 7-Eleven. You can't get it at 99 cent store. It is, you get these at gyms, GNCs, or if you look at the on our YouTube page or on our social media or on our description in the podcast catchers, you will get a coupon for 15% off a case. I just use it myself to get a case of Apollo flavor. And by the way, they have sour gummy worm flavor. They have grape bubble gum. They have Baja lime that tastes like Baja Fresh from Taco Bell. I mean, so delicious. And the best part, zero carbs, zero calories, zero crash.
Zero jitters.
That's right. Well, I'm around Ella, so I might be jittery today, but that's a whole different thing.
I'm jittery too. Don't worry, Mark. You're not alone.
Are you really? Are you jittery, meaning Ella, darling?
I mean, yeah, she's gorgeous. Well, and she's so sweet. And I don't, she, like, if you lived in LA, we would be friends. You'd be like, let's go shopping.
How long did you live in LA, Ella?
11 years. It was, I miss it. I love Austin so much. And I don't miss LA right now, LA. Mm-hmm. But I miss the LA of my memories.
Right.
Yeah. Nostalgic LA in my dreams.
Yeah, LA right now is not the LA you remember. Because I'm in Los Feliz and Hannah's in Redondo Beach. Both places on a Saturday night would be so much fun.
Oh yeah, they're going down to the Strip, Bar Sinister, the Rainbow, Whiskey, Viper. I miss all that.
Or Hollywood, but it's dead. I did a YouTube video where I went down to the Sunset Strip. Mm-hmm. Everything was closed. It was right after the Black Lives Matter. Everything's boarded up. It's horrible. But half of LA moved to Austin, so I'm sure some of your friends are over there, right?
No one that I know, though. And believe me, like Texans, okay, so you know, when you live in LA, like you're not necessarily keenly aware, you just become aware that like, oh, San Francisco has beef with us? Why? Okay. Right. That sounds-
It's a baseball thing, it's stupid.
I guess, but even on porn sets in San Francisco, there's this like San Francisco, LA, like, I don't know, just a thing.
There's a beef? There's a San Francisco, LA porn beef?
In some circles, but then you also eventually realize that New York also has this like thing where they're very condescending about LA.
Right.
And especially like New York, like journalists love to talk about LA as though it's like some, I don't know, some version of New York that could never live up to anything, you know, worthwhile. And it's like, damn, y'all too. Y'all are all the salt fields coast to coast.
Everybody hates LA, apparently.
Texas doesn't like California in general because they're moving here and they don't like it. And that I'm sure there's some extra, like, well, they're driving up the prices of everything. And it's like, that's how life is, I guess. Like, people from the Southwest moved to California and eventually drove up this. It's like, I don't know. It's just everybody hates California.
But Austin isn't like everywhere. I think, doesn't the rest of Texas hate Austin, and Austin hates the rest of Texas?
Austin's supposed to be cool.
Austin is very cool. It is, yeah. But still, I find that when you identify with a geographic sort of locality, you will hold that on the very highest tier in your heart. So any opportunity to sort of declare yourselves the winner over someone else, especially someone on like sort of a maybe more national stage that gets a lot of recognition, you just do it, you know, like, well, we're better than that town. I mean, even in small towns, in small, you know, towns that are nearby, they do it for, you know, high school football or whatever. But yeah, Austin has been pretty cool. There are a lot of people from LA moving here. Nobody I, you know, am super close with personally, but it is a thing. And can I tell you the reason I moved to Austin?
Please do.
So I actually almost went to college here. But I ended up going to UT Dallas instead for undergrad because I wanted to stay close to where my parents were in North Texas. And then my first semester of freshman year, they moved to Austin where I could have gone to college, but I stayed to be close to them. Cool guys. And so anyway, I ended up coming to Austin a lot over the years. I'd visit them several times a year for South by Southwest right. and for Christmas and stuff. And I just love the city so much. And my family is, you know, I mean, I'm at my parents' house right now. I'm dog sitting for them while they're out of town.
Aww.
Yeah. And so
it's what really kind nice. Of dog?
Two Pomeranians, and they will probably wander over at some point, and I'll show you.
Please do. I'm about to get a Pomeranian myself here soon.
I love Pomeranian. I have some Pomeranian right in here.
Oh my God, they're like little teddy bears.
They are. They're wonderful.
And my brother had a half Pomeranian, half Chihuahua. I actually had two of them.
Oh wow, how cute!
They're very, very, so very sweet. Cute. But Austin, I went to Austin once, and it was the least party day of the year of all time, because it was the first day of UT of the college, so nobody was out. And so I went to the Museum of the Weird, and they had to give me a private tour because nobody was there. They're like, we've never given a tour just to one person. This is the slowest day we've ever had.
That sounds ideal to me, though, because I do not want to party with college kids. That sounds like not fun to me. I would like to never hang out with college kids.
Exactly.
I don't want to be hit on by college kids because I don't want to have to say the words, darling, I could have birthed you. That's not fun for me. But it is really cool. Even on slow party days, like there's always when we're not in a global deadly pandemic, there's always some kind of cool shit going on. There's cool galleries, there's cool venues, there's bands coming all the time. And just so many independent small businesses that do really great stuff, whether it's amazing food or amazing coffee or just really cool, weird ideas. Like there's a really cool toy shop. I hope it's still around. Yeah, but it's really great. Also, there's a lot of good food, and gas is $1.85 a gallon.
Yeah, that's what happens when you drive across country from the West Coast to the East Coast. The gas prices just go down, 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 down. Until you hit New Orleans when it's like 99 cents a gallon, but it just goes down, 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 down. But yeah, I liked Austin. Austin's like the Silver Lake of Texas, really.
Yes, that is perfect. That's a perfect analogy.
Yeah, so it's so and our actually you were on with Santa Claus this year. I was actually thinking of having you back, but we ended up having a comedian Maggie Mayfield who moved from Los Angeles to Austin. So if you ever see her name around, check her out. She's very funny, and tell her I said hi. But I did also the last time you were on, I was going to dig this out. I finally did. This I got when I met you 5 years ago at AVN. Probably about 5 years ago today. It's a virtual reality headset. Mm-hmm. Now, I want you to tell me, I know it's 5 years out of date at least because I got it 5 years ago, but how out of date is this model?
Oh, wow.
Well, it requires you to put a phone into it. And
where does the phone go?
The little sort of lip that has the branding on it, you're supposed to slide a phone right in there.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's what that's for. Okay, because I had no idea. So like
you would like download and it's, I don't even think most phones these days even support that kind of VR because it's terrible. It was never good. It was like, I think there was this half-hearted idea that like, hey, maybe if we just send this to people and, you know, they'll know that it's not good quality because it's just a piece of cardboard. That model, even though it is not made of cardboard, is still what we would refer to as a cardboard VR model because it's modeled around Google Cardboard, which was mm-hmm. literally made of cardboard. You fold it together, you would put your phone inside and strap it in, and you could put it in, set up like a like VR side-by-side 3D video and, you know, look around sort of.
I was wondering what this was. Now I knew you would know.
Yeah, but it's just not good. It's like we're trying to sell this big, amazing technology by giving people the tiniest scrap of like barely a taste of it. It would be like trying to sell someone like a laptop by giving them like a 3D sticker. Like, see, isn't this cool? Now, if we use real technology, you can actually do shit. And it doesn't suck and it doesn't make you sick.
So even when you started with VR, this was probably outdated, right?
No, I mean, it was still very much in date. It was just not good. And the argument for it, even though at the time VR professionals knew, like, this isn't good, this might actually make people not want to try things because they're going to think that this is representative of what a VR experience is like. And, you know, not to be elitist, because it wasn't very accessible back then. They were very expensive headsets. They still kind of are. But it's just, even then we knew it was bad, but we hoped maybe people would be reasonable and think, okay, well, I got this for free. So obviously the real technology that you have to pay a few hundred bucks for is going to be an upgrade to this free piece of cardboard that I got. But it wasn't good. It's never really been good.
Because Hannah, as you know, this is the first VR cam girl.
And that's amazing. I think people are just very disrespectful and they expect everything for free. So shame on them.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Especially
so I've never experienced VR porn, Ella.
And now's the perfect time to have it. We're in a pandemic, you're home. There's only so much porn you can watch on television. Now having like virtual reality would be amazing.
Well, Ella's always been ahead of the curve. So she knew people would, she knew there'd be a global pandemic and people would be isolated in their homes.
There you go.
Like this.
Okay, well, not so much that exactly, but I have been very enthusiastic about VR porn for, it's going on 7 years now since I started in the VR porn industry, which is longer than most VR industry people have been working in VR. But so VR porn, if you are not familiar with it, it's immersive and it's transportative, and essentially you put on a headset, you're in a 3D environment where things are happening around you and they feel very realistic and you feel a sense of presence in the space. And almost all of the VR porn that is made, it's POV. So you feel like you are a character in the scene and things are happening to you. And there are additional elements, like if you have a toy like from Kiru or Levance, which are two teledildonic toy companies, you can connect it to your computer via Bluetooth and then your toy will sync with the scene. So it sort of reciprocates whatever you're seeing. So the emotions that you're seeing on screen happen within your toy.
Teledildonic seems like a word that you, Ella Darling, would make up.
I did not make it up. I would have found something with a little bit of a better like mouthfeel. I feel like it's a little bit clunky. You know, it doesn't quite go down smooth.
It's kind of musical. Teledildonic. I like it.
But yeah, so I've done everything there is to do in VR porn. I've done 360 3D porn where it's 12 cameras, so two in each direction, up, down, left, right, front, back, creating a 360 degree global experience. I've done 180 3D, which is a lot more accessible and easier to create. And I think for porn, it's probably, it makes sense because you're not necessarily going to be sitting in your desk chair, like spinning around, like, wee, jerking off in all directions.
Which might be fun though, for some people, you get aerobic exercise at the same time.
Hey, yeah. I mean, everybody needs it. Get your steps in.
Be a good idea though. I mean, you get rewarded with a certain kind of like sexual like act if you do like 15-20 push-ups, and then you get a like, okay, here, I did my 15-20 push-ups, and then boom, here, you're rewarded.
Okay, interesting that you mentioned that, because the next thing I did in VR was I used basically volumetric video. So I used a Microsoft Kinect to capture performers in space. So I would set I would designate on the X, Y, and Z axes, like the space I wanted to capture in front of the camera. And right. So it would ignore the rest of the room. It would just capture the performer. And then I could place her into a digitally rendered environment. And I use that to make a dating app, like a dating sim. So you're with me in a rainy cafe and I'm in front of you and I introduce myself. And then you have three potential, it's sort of choose your own adventure. Like, what do you want to say next? And you can like say something nice, say something mean, or say something like sexual. And if you say something mean, you lose points. If you say something nice, you gain points. And if you say something sexual before you have enough of like a rapport determined by points that you don't see, then I'm just like, I'm going to go. And if you get enough rapport points and then you say something sexy, like, you know, at an appropriate time, then it would reward you with a sexy scene.
It's like a sexy Assassin's Creed. Kind of like a Leisure Suit Larry.
Yeah, yes, exactly. Like a combination. But it was really hard to create. And so but it felt like you were really there with the person. So that's what led us to create the VR cams. So did the VR cams. We were the first VR webcam company ever, I think. So that's what made me the first VR cam girl, because I co-founded the company. Mm-hmm. And we licensed that out. Then I worked for a VR headset company. So I've worked for the hardware people also. And now I work for a really cool company. Can I plug it a little bit?
Please go for it.
It's called Vero PlaySpace. And we kind of do a lot of things because I work with visionaries who are brilliant people. Like every single person I work for, I just simply adore, which is so rare in a workplace. But Vero PlaySpace is on Steam. It's a CGI VR sexy experience. We have pre-recorded what we call dreams, where you enter into it and there's a CGI character who sort of engages with you. It can be interactive. Sometimes it interacts with pretty much every teledildonic device on the market. And I even got to do one. So a little over a year ago, I got to be, I wore the motion capture suit and I did the whole like black suit with little white ping pong ball style things all over me with like a thing mounted in front of me to capture my facial expressions. And it was so cool. So you can hang out with me as a video game character. So that's one part of it. The big goal is to have social spaces there where you can hang out with a partner or meet someone new and interact with each other's toys. So like mm-hmm. I could reach out and interact with your virtual genitalia and it would activate your toy. So I'm basically giving you a hand job. And it's, you know, that's the idea for that is just a very accepting, consent-centered experience. But we also have a virtual cam girl, and she cams on Chattermate and Cam4, and her name is Vex Ruby. And she is she's so charming, and she's so sweet, and she's so fun. She's really sexy, and she's gorgeous and everything, but like, she's just this wonderful creature, and she's a delight. And yeah, so we're working with, they call them lewd tubers in the space. I'm still wrapping my heart around the word lewd because
teledildonics is better than lewd tube.
I just don't love it, but Vex Ruby is going to make me love it because she's amazing and I love her. So check out Vero PlaySpace and check out Vex Ruby. I love her so much. She's so great and good. So yeah, that's where I'm at now. So that's all of the shit that I've done in VR, all of the things that, you know, in the adult spaces that are possible that people are doing and have been doing. And because I've sort of bounced around and tried to, you know, dip my toes everywhere to get a sense of adult VR in every form, mm-hmm. I feel like that is sort of a map of porn in VR. So,
well,
thank you.
Since you always set me up with the segues really well, everybody's into your feet. We got that. We got that with Santa Claus last time. You said dip your toes, so I'm going there. I heard you on another show. Or no, you on Vice. Vice interviewed you.
Oh, yeah.
And you were like blowing this interviewer's mind. Like I don't think she's ever seen porn. She had no idea anything you were talking about, but you were talking about the giantess fetish. How women,
yeah.
How.
Sorry, I'm not king shaming. Whatever you're into, cool. It's more that like the people who have a giantess fetish that reach out to me think they're like pulling the wool over my eyes and try to get free porn out of it. So anyway, please continue.
How do they do that?
So they'll message me and be like, hey, I'm doing a project for school and it's about this, like, you know, 500 foot woman who, does this, you know, pithy plot points. So what I need you to do is like, put your phone on the ground and just like step on it a bunch. So it's like, you're stepping on villagers, but it's for school. people mm-hmm. do that for foot fetish stuff too. Like I just, I'm in a class for like anatomy and we're studying feet right now. So can you like put your feet in front of a camera and like scrunch your toes and then flex them? Like, can you do that for like 3 minutes straight and send it to me? Cause it's for a school project.
Wow. Don't they know you're the smartest porn star? Or
Doesn't take much to know when someone's trying to jerk off to you.
No, I understand that. That's
very true. They're very obvious.
Well, just you know, take your feet, dot, dot, dot. That pretty much gives it away. But I mean, some guys are just into your feet.
And that's fine. So am I. Join my OnlyFans, you know?
Right. Well, we're going to get to that. But then there is a fetish. And I just recently discovered it myself. And it was like, okay, whatever. But guys just, they fantasize about being really small and having women step on them. And you know about this, Hannah?
I do definitely know about it. Usually it's men that are in high positions, like corporate positions, and they're always in charge. And when they go home, they want to be, you know, dominated.
Well, dominated is one thing, but then they want the woman to be like 20 feet tall.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I went to school with one of my good girlfriends, and she was 6'4" in 10th grade. And there was a couple football players that had a fetish for her.
So but you were telling the Vice reporter about this, and it was blowing her mind. She had no idea what you were talking about.
It's stuff that sort of surprised me along the way, that now I'm just like, oh yeah, giantess. Oh, did they want you to like pick up their little wiggly bodies and put them in your mouth and pretend you're eating them up?
Well, that's another one. The guys want to be eaten up.
Yeah. There's vor, there's giantess, there's foot fetish, and almost every fetish. And again, when I speak of these things, I'm not shaming the fetish. It's just some of the people who have interacted with me about them in a way that has been really sleazy. That's my negative reaction to it. So I love, mm-hmm. like I have fans who are into these things and I am so thrilled to make that content for them. But mm-hmm. yeah, and so there are all these sort of like just tendrils of different fetishes, and they frequently sort of like intersect and intertwine. And it's just this beautiful tapestry of fapping to cool things, and I love it. And it's very fun. Like, it's fun for me as a performer to make that content, because it's such a nice break from just the norm. But yeah.
And I know you have a Batgirl outfit. I'm sure there's superhero cosplay guys are into that, and women are into that.
Yeah, for sure. Rule 34, man.
Huh?
Rule 34, people are into anything. If you can think of it, there's porn of it on the internet. And the extension to that, maybe it's a separate role. People want it.
I'm with you 100%. I always say, if you can think about it, somebody's out there doing it.
Are there any other fetishes that surprise you that you come across in your illustrious career?
The one I would say that was most shocking to me was balloon popping.
Yeah.
And the thing is with the fetishes, like the further removed a fetish is from like tits and genitalia, the more innocuous it can seem. And because of that, even though they're completely sexualizing it, it's absolutely pornographic to them. They think that they can sort of like con you into giving them free content because like it's not real porn, but it's pornographic to you. So either you want your fetish to be accepted and respected, in which case you should treat it like a fetish and pay for, you know, private content, or you don't. I don't know. It's this weird mindset, this cognitive dissonance that is present in certain folks. But there were some folks who would walk around the floor of AVN asking performers to like squeeze a balloon until it pops, and they would record it, and they're making money off of that, or at least jerking off to it. But because it seems innocuous, it just seems weird, so many people would do it. And it's like, you're here to make money. If you're fulfilling someone's fetish, they need to pay you for it. And if they don't want to pay you for it, they shouldn't have it. Like, that's it. Right. So that was the one that surprised me. I almost did it. I didn't really want to, because that sounds viscerally unpleasant. I mean, more than anything. But my mentor at the time was like, no, you're not doing that. They need to pay you or they can't film you. I was like, oh, okay. She taught me a lot.
Smart.
Yeah. Very smart.
But speaking of that, I guess the actual awards are today, the AVNs, and you went to XBiz last week, but obviously it's virtual. You missed that fan interaction?
Yes, absolutely. I missed the fan interaction. The thing I miss most about AVN is me and all of my really, like, probably a lot of my friends, like some of my closest friends are all hanging out. It's like a work vacation. So right. At the end of the night, you can just like walk around like the restaurant, the bar, the other bar, just meander around, and you'll find people that you really enjoy spending time with and you just never really get to because you only see each other on set and then you're working and, you know, everyone's so busy. It's so hard to make time to spend time together. But it's just like, it's like porno summer camp almost. And then it ends with porno prom. And right. Yes, I could get dressed up and glamorous. I could do my hair and makeup and put on a sequined gown and just like take photos of myself. I could do that anytime and I don't. The thing that makes it special at AVN is that you have crowds looking upon you and it makes you feel so like, I don't know, just it's otherworldly. And all of your friends are dressed up too. It really is like prom. Right. And then just seeing the photographs and being photographed in perfect lighting the next day. Like, I'm never going to photograph myself the way that the photographers on the red carpet do. And there's just
but
something that feels
wonderful
very legal.
Any light, Ella, you know that.
Well, that's sweet of you. But no, it's just, it's something, it's the, there's like a mise-en-scene to it. It's just something you can't capture unless you're actually there. And right. Yeah.
Well, there is an energy. And like I say, last year when we were talking to Santa, you were like, you bump into people and you forget that you fucked them on film and
yeah.
And you actually get to know them when you're not fucking them on film.
Yeah, and that's really like, there are people who like, I've had chemistry with on camera. It was fine, but like, we're probably not gonna hang out and catch up, especially because, you know, I lived in Highland Park and they lived in the Valley and like, I don't even wanna leave my neighborhood. I don't wanna drive out of my neighborhood for like an important task. So it's just really hard to prioritize. But yeah, that made it really special.
Mm. And last year's photographs, I think it was at XBiz. You have that dress. You look stunning.
Thank you. I got it for Christmas.
That's right. And you were vamping on the red carpet. You were really going to town. But how was XBiz virtually?
Nothing is ever the same as being in person. XBiz had some challenges this year, just with the platform they were on, but by and large, it was pretty decent. I felt like, you know, I moderated the panel about VR porn and we had a really great discussion and really good insights. And I liked it. I also liked the sort of like peek into people's homes and, you know, the VR panel, like everybody has like really cool shit. Like my friend Anna, her apartment, like everything has these awesome LED like rainbow lights and like her house is like decked out. It's basically like a cyberpunk wonderland. And she's also brilliant. So it's like getting to hear her speak while she's in this amazing like palace of cyberpunk brilliance that she's crafted. It was just, that's one of the things that I liked about it. Just being able to see into people's spaces, which sounds creepy now that I say it. So
no, I know what you mean, especially, well, I mean, you know, I would say most, if not all the porn stars, we've got OnlyFans and they do it in their house. And you were doing that for a long time. So
I have only been doing it since September. I avoided it for a long time because I was like, who the fuck wants to see me? But no, I started doing it and it's been really fun. I really like it.
But before you were camming and you were doing VR in your house and you had a whole setup. So, and I'm sure, you know, now that you've just moved, you're still getting everything together, but your Highland Park apartment had a whole space there. And
it did. It was really cool. I love my apartment in Austin. Like every other place I've moved into, it's taken me like months to actually settle in and unpack boxes and do all the things. But living here is like, this is my little space and I want to love it and thrive in it. And it's so cozy and homey. I wish I could be broadcasting from there so I could show it to you, but next time. But yes. It's just so, I love it. It's so good. I just love being there. It's such a
and also
place.
You have Texas tattooed.
Yes, we do.
And there it is. Yes, Texas tattoo on your shoulder.
Oh, wow.
And you're always, nobody rocks a pair of cowboy boots like you. And I was telling you, Hannah, so I posted a picture. I asked Hannah which one to choose that I'm going to post for social media. And she's like, the one where you're turning your back because You got such a beautiful back.
Oh, that's so mm-hmm. sweet. Thank you.
I didn't know that was a thing, Hannah, because I
Oh, it's a big thing. Yeah. No, even men, they love it. That beautiful line down your back is so feminine and sexy, like Nicole Kidman. Beautiful.
Oh, that is so sweet. Thank you. I need to see this photo. I need to see what you're seeing.
Yeah.
I'll text it so you can see it after the show. But it's you over your shoulder, and I wanted to get the tattoos because you have the Texas, and you also have the Dewey Decimal of Harry Potter, which is problematic in a couple ways. But
hey, fuck J.K. Rowling, but that story doesn't belong to her anymore. It belongs to the fans, and we make it our own. And one of the most amazing Harry Potter fan films, Severus Snape and the Marauders. Severus Snape is played by my incredibly beautiful friend, Morgana, who is a trans woman herself. And so she took that story and she made it into something that people love even more, in spite of JKR's bullshit, transphobic fuckery.
Right. But
and Eddie Izzard said that he didn't think she was transphobic.
I don't give a shit what Eddie Izzard says. Eddie Izzard doesn't get to speak for the world.
All right.
You know, like, it doesn't, like, Eddie Izzard can decide that is not what, is it they or she?
It's a she.
She. Okay. I wasn't sure which pronouns she went with, but.
Yeah, she pronouns now.
It doesn't have to be offensive to her if her brothers and sisters and non-binary folks who also occupy that space are like, no, actually it is though. Like, it doesn't have to offend you, but it offends a lot of us. If it offends, like, I'm not trans. When my trans friends say, no, fuck that person, I'm gonna be like, I hear you, and I'm not gonna argue with you because it's not my fucking place, you know?
But still, Harry Potter was a part of your life, and so was the Dewey Decimal System, and you can't.
And you know what? Melville Dewey sucks too, if we're gonna be real.
Oh no, well, you talked about that last time.
Yeah, so
Melville, like, because you went to the college where Melville Dewey, who started the Dewey Decimal System, went, and apparently he was an anti-Semite, and there's a few things wrong with him.
But in any case, it's about the community. It's about the friends we made along the way.
Yes, because that was the first time I met you 5 years ago. You showed me your tattoos, and I was. And I was in trances. I still am. But also, I was even more in trance because, as usual, I did a lot of research and was looking at. And these are all old. I know these are all old because you haven't done scenes in a long, long time. But you did a parody, a porn parody. I can't believe I didn't see this before, of The Room.
Yes, I did.
The movie The Room. Hannah, you familiar with The Room?
Movie The Room, it sounds familiar. I think I would have to see like a YouTube clip of it.
Oh, I encourage you to see a YouTube clip. I'm going to send you YouTube clips.
Okay, please do.
This is the shittiest movie. I love bad movies. This is the shittiest movie of all time. Amazingly so. I have sat so many people down and said, wait 5 minutes. If you did not entertain in 5 minutes, I'm going to shut this off. Nobody's ever had me shut it off. It's the most hilariously shitty movie you've ever seen in your life. James Franco did the movie about it.
Disaster Artist. That movie. Disaster Artist. I did see the Disaster Artist and I tried to watch the original, but I was like, I don't know. I was in a grumpy mood anyway. I wanted to throw something at my TV because I didn't like the way he spoke.
Yeah, it was not very good.
Yeah.
So I had to figure somebody did a porn parody of The Room, but I don't know. I just Googled Little Darling. I put it in Spank Bang or something, and then it's like The Room parody. I'm like, The Room parody, this is the greatest thing ever.
See, I'm glad that you said that because most people are like, well, isn't The Room its own porn parody? And it's like, you're so funny, you're the first person who said that. Yes,
I actually liked your Room better than the Disaster Artist. I thought Disaster Artist was okay, but and once again, Ella Darling is a great actress. Because I saw some S&M stuff that you did, and you had a ball gag in your mouth, and you were articulating so well. In the Room parody, you were so good at being bad, but it was good.
Thank you.
I will watch your parody, though. That's one I will watch.
That was, if not my very first, then one of my very first boy-girl scenes of the handful that I did. Important.
Mm-hmm. Now, are there other like shitty movie parodies, like a Birdemic parody or like a Dolomite parody or So there's something else, like more Mystery Science Theater related stuff that I might see.
Look, go to Wood Rocket. Go to Wood Rocket. Leroy Myers is, he's brilliant. He's a brilliant man. He's a wonderful, kind man. But he is so good at thinking of the most outlandish spins on porn parodies that, like, you'll, I was in Ask Venture Time. I was Princess Bubblegum.
Oh my God, that's awesome. Mm-hmm. I love that show.
It was very good, so.
Who's a little, he's a little like a peppermint guy. He's evil, but he's cute.
Oh, fuck, I don't remember. I've been trying to remember. Okay, so real quick. So The Room, I actually got to meet the director at Comic-Con and I told him what I did. I told him like, hey, I actually started. Yeah, Tommy Wiseau. I was like, yeah, I actually starred in a porn parody of your movie. And he just was like, oh, that's cool. And then he gave me a basketball.
Aw.
Because they were giving out The Room branded basketballs.
No, I remember that. I interviewed him a couple times at Comic-Con, but.
Yeah. But actually, so the whole, I haven't done much research. I haven't looked into it in a long time, but I'm pretty sure that a big part of the resurgence of The Room was, so my friend Michael Rousselet, who is one of the founders, creators, directors of 5 Second Films, a comedic, brilliant comedic mind. He right. saw it and it was so absurd that he started inviting his friends to just pack the theaters just to watch how absurd and bizarre it was. And he has a lot of, he's just a very good, lovely person. So he has lots of friends. So he sort of he got so into it and so obsessed with it that I think he might have been involved with The Disaster Artist to some degree. Again, I'm not certain, but it's his passion, not mine. But when he found out that I was in The Room, because he was so into it and really tried to get people into it, he was just psyched that his friend did the porno parody.
Which is funny because you look nothing like the girl in The Room.
No, it's a porn parody, so I don't.
You put on a really bad wig.
Oh, it was real bad. It was so bad. It was not a cute look. No.
Both of you are fucking with the worst wigs on. I'm amazed that they stayed on.
But I'm sure they actually came off a few times, so there were probably some cuts there.
That would be fun footage, though. It's just like the wig scene.
I can imagine some of the outtakes that from some of the movies you did. But you started in S&M, mm-hmm. and then you went to Girl Girl, and then you went to Boy Girl, and then you went to basically camming.
Well, I actually was camming early on. I just had kind of a sucky experience, so I stopped camming. And then I cammed for a few years when I was still doing Girl Girl out of a studio in the Valley that was the back building behind a strip club with a bunch of offices. I think it was supposed to be the offices for the strip club and they just repurposed it. And so we had these cute little cam rooms and there were people that would moderate things so we didn't have to dick around and everything was really, really high quality. And it was really, really fun too. I loved the people I camped with. I loved the people who ran the studio. I'm still friends with some of them. And it was just a really surreal kind of experience. There was an auto body shop next door. And there was this guy we called Ankle Bracelet because he had an ankle bracelet because he was, but I was driving this 1966 Ford LTD at the time that could get to the Valley from downtown or from the Valley to downtown.
Effectively, could do both at the same round trip.
Maybe 60% of the time. So there was a lot of issues and our sweet ankle bracelet would fix my car for free all the time. And we almost bedazzled the ankle bracelet, but we didn't get around to it, which is good because I think that would have been that probably would have gotten him in trouble. So
the bedazzling would have set it off.
Yeah, I don't know. Anyway, so I did cam before. I just, when I got back into camming, it was just the VR camming and I actually didn't do all that much of it. I did it for my own company, but then once we licensed it to Cam4, I only did a show occasionally. I was mostly training cam girls and working on the marketing and stuff.
Right. And then you did the fetish stuff, S&M stuff, and I've seen you do dom and sub. Which do you prefer?
I'm a switch personally, so I mean I kind of like both. I like being a sub if the dom is competent, mm-hmm. but I'm bratty, so if I don't respect you as a dom, I kind of just want to pop off. That didn't make any fucking sense. Do you want to try again? Okay. You want me to, I'm sorry. Walk me through your logic on this one. You want me to what exactly? And I'm, okay.
You're okay, such well, an analytical me, sub.
It's just like, you gotta earn it. You know, I feel like there are some people who just decide like, I'm a dom. And because I'm a dom, okay, well, you think you're a dom, but you're not, in this situation, you're not succeeding. And I just think you could spend a little more time developing sort of your character, your just everything, your approach.
Have you ever considered going into maybe directing?
Kind of. Yes and no. I mean, I did direct for VR porn. I directed like scenes and stuff for my own company. A lot of it was sort of experimental. I don't know that that's really the best role for me.
Okay.
I like management and I like being creative and creative directing, but if I'm directing for somebody else, then I don't feel like that's a situation that gives me a lot of creative control. And I don't know. It's just not something that excites me, you know?
I'll tell you what excites me. Is especially since I've been doing some research, but your orgasms on camera, from what I've seen, they're amazing. They seem very genuine. They seem very enthusiastic. Once again, sometimes I watch porn and it's like they don't seem to be doing enough or they're doing too much, and you never seem less than genuine.
Thank you. I would say, well, what are you watching?
I'm watching you, like, I'm sure 10-year-old stuff on X videos and Spank Bang.
Walk that one back. Okay, so I guess it depends on sort of who the scene is with and what the style is. Because, yeah, most of the time, yes, especially girl-girl stuff, I genuinely love women. Most of the time it is genuine. It's very few and far between that I've felt the need to fake it. And when I do fake it, like, I know how. The stuff that I shoot myself, I know my body. I've lived in it for a while. So that's all genuine. It's very rare. Yeah, it's very rare that I've needed to, but I certainly have. There certainly are some scenes out there where it's just like, oh my God, I am right. I was supposed to be on the way home an hour ago. So can we just.
Right. Well, you like ramp up and there's like this whole yes, and it's great.
And then some shrieking or squeaking, yeah.
Yes.
My style. Yeah. Yeah, so okay, those are the real ones.
Oh, okay, good. I thought so. I'm pretty good at that. I can tell when a woman's faking. Not that
every man can.
Not
you can feel from the inside, right? If she's faking, because you like tremor.
And I fake myself. So I'm who am I to say?
Yes, but you know that they can tell from the inside. And if you know how to do a Kegel.
I know how to do a Kegel.
So
I know how to fake.
Yeah. We all know, like, we're all professionals. We all know the fuck what we're doing.
Yeah.
I'm not a professional. Like, you're a professional, but, and trust me, I'm so out of practice. I don't even know if I have amateur status in that right now, but it's been a few times because, like I said, I've said this before on the air, but it takes me a long time. Sometimes an excruciatingly long time. And I know when the woman's like, okay, enough of this.
She's, yeah. That
reminds me. And I've never had sex without a condom, so I know how to Kegel it and make it seem like, but and then run to the bathroom real quick so that she doesn't see that I didn't come in the condom.
Yeah. So I feel like sometimes you come and sometimes you don't, no matter what gender you identify with. And like, if you had fun, if you enjoyed yourself, like it's about the journey, not the destination. Right. And I'm not saying like it's cool to just never give a partner an orgasm, but I feel like this expectation that like sex isn't over until an orgasm has happened just puts pressure on people in a way that isn't conducive to a positive experience. Like just have fun and enjoy each other. And hopefully you make each other come. Maybe you don't, but as long as you're having fun together, that's what matters.
And hopefully you come together, but we'll see what happens. But, and I was watching your TED talk today too. How did that happen?
They reached out to me and asked me if I wanted to do a TED Talk in Southern Germany. And I was already going to be traveling. Like I was already, I had to do a few panels and give demos at a film festival in North Carolina, then fly straight to Germany, no, straight to Amsterdam for a VR conference and give a talk there. And then I was supposed to sort of like network and just like interact with the European VR folks there. But they had asked me, it was pretty last minute, to come and do the TED Talk in Southern Germany. So I basically got to Amsterdam, gave a talk the next day, flew to Germany at like 5 o'clock the next morning, already jet lagged from flying to Amsterdam and from flying to North Carolina doing all that. And then I had that day to sort of like get my shit together. And then right. the next afternoon, give the TED Talk. I flew into Amsterdam and I was still sort of finishing up a lot of my notes on it because I didn't have a lot of time to prepare for it. And then they were like, hey, so we have a rehearsal tonight and a rehearsal in the morning. So you need to be there. Having done all this traveling, having spoken on multiple panels, multiple, like just giving talks, my vocal cords were fucked all the way up. Like it hurt, I was rasping and I was like, look, I don't know that I can do two rehearsals. And also I'm not good at rehearsals. Like I can rehearse by myself, but if I'm rehearsing to a room of like, people sort of going about their business and maybe two people sitting and sort of conferring with each other. Like when I give a talk, I feed off of the energy in the room. Like I was never great at public speaking until I started doing it and had to be. So I did the rehearsal and I was not good at it. And I could see the concern on their faces and they were like, okay. And then the next day I was like late to it because I was hella jet lagged and I was asleep while they were trying to call me. So I finally got out there. They're like concerned at this point. Right. I like sleep for most of the day until the next rehearsal. Like I put some chairs together in a study room at this business college and just slept on the chairs. Did the next rehearsal, a little better, still not great, still same situation. They're like, okay. And so then I finally do it and I was fine because I had a room full of people that I could sort of engage with and sort of, you know, I could gauge their response and, you know, modulate my points. So it was fine at that point. Just the whole experience felt very miserable, like waking up really early. And I understand like what an asshole I sound like, oh, they flew me out. But I had to go to Southern Germany from Amsterdam and I had to give a TED talk.
Oh, poor Ella.
My throat hurt. But I don't know. It's just like, it was just so much and I was doing so much and it was just a lot. But so I did it. It was like, fuck yeah, nailed it. They were like over the moon because their expectations were so low. You couldn't trip on them.
Right.
And so then it was time
especially
to leave.
For an adult film star, I would imagine they.
Oh yeah, absolutely. So then it's time to go, and I'm like, okay, cool. I've got my bags packed. I've got my. Anytime I leave any place, I'm like, okay, phone keys, wallet, vape, phone keys, wallet, passport, phone, you know, whatever. I'm like, okay, phone keys, wallet, passport. It was lost.
Passport?
When I got to the hotel they put us in, the first room was like creepy. It looked like someone's grandmother's sitting room. There were cabinets of tchotchkes on the wall.
Oh.
There was like, I mean, old like vintage furniture. It didn't look like a hotel. It literally looked like someone's grandparent stays there, like winters there or something. And that room had like the way like in Europe when they do like larger size beds, they just put two twin mattresses together. My passport had fallen between the two mattresses.
Oh, so no.
They tried to put me in another room that didn't exist. It was actually a dilapidated building. Finally, I got put into like this little dorm style room. It was fine. There was internet and a bed and I didn't give a shit. But yeah, so when we were leaving, we stopped at the hotel. They couldn't find it. And finally, as we were about to pull away, this hotel worker comes like, wait, like brandishing my passport, like, wait. And got it just in time, so.
Yeah,
that scares me to hear. Okay, ever since you've seen like movies like Hostel and then like Norman Bates' mom and you're like, oh, what's gonna happen?
There was a doorway that wasn't a doorway. It was just a door. When you opened the door, there was nothing behind it.
I wonder what's behind the wall. Just chip it away.
No, I'm just kidding. I know. yeah, it was. And then I got back to Amsterdam and hung out with my friends, and then I flew home the next day. But anyway, it was just a lot. It's just a,
it was funny because the hack joke now is when in stand-up comedy, if somebody doesn't get a laugh, like, oh, I'm doing my TED talk now.
Welcome to my TED talk.
Yeah. But then it was funny because I was watching the TED talk. I've seen it before, but it's, there were a couple times you were throwing out jokes, and you couldn't really hear the audience. So I didn't know if you were like pausing for the joke, but I didn't know if they were bombing or not. But then later I heard the audience better at when you were being funny.
They were responding in the moment, but they were Germans.
Right. The mics were all on you, so I couldn't. At towards the end, I'm like, oh, they're laughing, and I was.
But Germans tell, respond differently. Yeah, Germans have a very different response to comedy. I mean, in fact, that whole like region, they just, it's not that they don't appreciate it, it's just that they interact with it in a way that is not the way that American audiences do. And I've been to Germany, God, a fuckload of times. I love it there. I love Germany and I love Germans. They're cute, they're fun. But even Germans know that like, oh, I'm German. No, yes, that was funny.
Oh, and the sexy accents.
And they're not being condescending. They just like, they enjoy things internally. They don't like raucously express themselves in the way that you sort of get used to in America.
Well, I'm part German, so I understand. Yeah. So yeah. Anyway, how have you, as far as the, I was going to ask you last time, because you're a nerd from way back.
Yes.
And now everybody's a nerd. Does that bother you? Are you one of these people like, do you not like the nerds come lately, or what's your opinion on that? Because you were a dungeon master before anybody was into it.
Well, I played D&D. I DM'd once. No, like, look, I felt a little isolated when I was, you know, much younger, when I was like in high school. And I mean, a lot of my friends in high school were also into D&D. My friends in high school were also into nerdy shit. So I never felt that isolated, but it was not something that you could really engage with people on sort of a larger conversation, a larger discourse. I don't know, I think it's awesome. Like, because yeah, nerdy stuff is fun and awesome. And I'm honestly so glad that people are embracing it and finding the joy that I found in it. And I love seeing people discover it and be like, oh my God, how did I not know this is so great and so fun? I was like, yes, welcome. I'm so glad you're here. Like I'm not into gatekeeping.
Yeah, welcome to the club. The more the merrier.
Yeah, like I was brand new to it when I liked it. When I started liking D&D, people had been loving it for decades. So like, if I hadn't been embraced by people who were already into it, it wouldn't have been a place that I felt comfortable and was able to find this joy. So I don't want to make other people feel alienated in the space that I love. I want to share it with them. I want to encourage them because I don't know. I just think that's cool. Like,
but when you go to Comic-Con and all these places, do you think, and you know, and everybody's just so putting on the nerd. You think it's like, it's too much, or just keep growing?
I don't know. It sounds like you do though. What do you think? You want to talk about?
I don't know. I just, it's a weird thing for me. I think, I think it's changing a little bit. Obviously the, although I don't know, everybody's being so isolated now. Maybe it's not, but you know, like I think the culture—it's so mainstream now that I kind of miss the other stuff that was mainstream that you can't get now.
Like what?
I'm trying to think of non-nerdy things because I'm a nerd. I don't know.
Well, you know what I think it is. I think just like how we pioneered the way to have piercings and tattoos and hair color, everybody does it now. To be geeky is very sexy because you have Elon Musk and then you have Bill Gates and they're cool and they built all these things, so no one's gonna laugh at you because they're gonna be like, oh yeah, you're gonna be a multi-millionaire.
Yeah, well, it's something that you can just discuss and it's like, yeah, this is something that I enjoy, and people are like, oh yes, that might not be my thing, but I've heard of that. And you don't have to sort of defend yourself, mm-hmm, or explain yourself.
It's you're just respected.
Yeah, and I like that. And for me, it was never, I didn't enjoy it because it was something that no one else was doing. It wasn't the exclusivity for me. It was the joy that it brought me personally, and the way that it allowed me to connect with people in a way that made sense to me. And that's what I like. And I think that a lot of people who have previously scorned it probably did so because maybe they wanted to try it out too, but they didn't feel they were in a social place where they would continue to be accepted if they did. And so that's something that I like, that people are able to take a chance on things and not worry about, you know, if I do this, people in my work are going to think I'm weird, or someone's going to think that I'm like a de facto Satanist because they heard at their church that this thing is Satanism, or what have you. And so if someone's into it, I mean, if someone's doing something as an affectation, like, I'm always going to be like, okay, well, good for you, I guess. But I mean, I feel that way about pretty much anything. Like, you go to England for spring break and you come back with an English accent, that's, you're affecting that accent, and you're doing it for a reason that probably is pretty personal to you. And while I might think it's a little, I don't know, gauche, I'm not like, it's not my journey. I think that the people who are genuinely enjoying nerd culture, you can't fake enjoyment. I mean, you can, we just discussed that, you really can. But right. I don't know, on that level, like, If you're pretending to like it because you want cool points, if you really need cool points that bad, then sure, have them. And if you're just enjoying it because it's enjoyable, like, yeah, welcome.
I think more of my problem is that people used to bully us, and now we're doing the bullying. Not we are, but some of the people that were bullied are now doing the bullying. That bothers me. And the other thing that bothers me is nobody can really, and this is just a part of, you know, culture and the computer age and everything else, but people can't enjoy a work of art just for the work of art. It has to be dissected and analyzed and Easter eggs and this and that. Nobody can, I mean, you know, we're watching a Wonder Woman movie. There's no way to enjoy it because it's just been so dissected online, whether it's good or not.
I hear you on that, and that bothers me too. And what we're in a deadly pandemic. I just had like a several months long like anxiety episode because I live in America, and like, I just don't read it. Like, everyone has something critical to say about fucking anything, no matter what it is. People will complain about a product on Amazon because they didn't like the way it was shipped. Like, that's not the product. People have, like, yeah, people are going to bitch about anything. Just don't engage with it, and it can't bother you. And I don't like the way that people are, like, deciding that, you know, I was here first, so I'm going to bully people out of enjoying it, which is why I don't engage in it. Yeah. I got some flack for the stuff that I was into in my youth. I'm very glad that it's more accepted, and the people who are now coming into that and starting to learn to like it themselves don't have to face that. Like, I love that they can come here and enjoy it for the sake of enjoyment and not have to worry about, you know, the people who are going to be shitty about it. Like, I don't know. So yeah, that's a very long answer to your question. Yes.
Very, very well said.
Although I will tell you, I went to a Star Trek convention and did a couple videos about it. And I was like, I wish I got into this. I mean, these people are just so cool. I liked Star Trek when I was a kid, but I was never like that into it. And now I wish I was. Because the people, yes, I see that.
Okay, I think I already showed this. This is Vulcan. So, since we're on the topic and we've been talking about
Right, this. Right. Well, I have a theory that you're Vulcan, but there's something otherworldly about you. There always has been. A couple things before we go, appreciate you sticking with us.
I do too.
Tell Hannah, now, when you first started doing VR and you were experimenting with green screen, your eyes are so brightly green. Tell Hannah the story.
Okay, so the first iteration of the VR cams that we did, we used a green screen. So we were continuing on with the idea of like capturing the performer's body and placing them into a digital environment. But because my eyes can be, not all the time, only sometimes, but when it happened, it was unnerving. My eyes would get keyed out. And so my eyes would match the background, like the digital background. And it looked demonic. It looked so unsettling. And it wasn't
so
an all the time thing, but it was a, enough of the time thing. That, and so that was sort of why we changed from doing that to doing just a, we would create a 3D 360 capture of the space and then overlap, like overlay the video on top of it. So it was not seamless, but almost seamless, like enough to work because of that.
And as we've seen with the Bernie Sanders memes, it's been perfected now, but no, I think I would like to see that footage. I think I have a new fetish. I think that's the eyes blending in the background. I think is a new fetish.
Oh man!
Because I remember when I used to, when I was a kid, when they had the weathermen, and sometimes they would wear like a green tie or something. It would just blend in. They didn't even know. That's just You say it sounds demonic, but it sounds pretty sexy to me. I don't know, but
it does sound pretty sexy. I agree with Mark.
But how long before we have holograms and that technology?
I mean, we already technically do to some degree. It's just it's gimmicky more than anything.
Because I was just watching the sci-fi classic from the 90s, Virtuosity, in preparation for this. And, you know, when are we going to have like, just Ella Darling, just kind of, you just push a button, she's there, and things happen.
Like Total Recall.
Well, like Tupac sings a lot at Coachella, like that kind of thing.
But like, again, it's possible. I mean, there are small mounted, like small devices that can do something kind of similar on a smaller scale. So we already have it, I guess is what I'm saying. It's just, the question isn't when are we going to have the technology, it's when are we going to have enough of a consumer base to justify manufacturing it on a large scale level. I don't know that answer because I'm not great with customer data and statistics, but I believe
this, if this pandemic, which doesn't get any better, which I don't see it getting any better, I think it's going to come out pretty soon, probably in the next 3 to 5 years. I can see it.
Maybe.
And how's this pandemic? Go ahead.
Oh, no, please.
This is what sucks about Zoom. I hate Zoom. I have the and we've had such a great time, but this would be so much better if the three of us were right in person. But I have a theory that Zoom caused the pandemic, because I never heard of Zoom before the pandemic, and now everybody fucking uses it. So I don't know. And they got like $14.99 a month, so.
Oh yeah, we have Zoom parties. Like my girlfriend Mary and I, it's fun. For her birthday, we had a Zoom party. Mark was there.
But what I was gonna say was, has the pandemic now helped not only Vero Club, but the OnlyFans? Now everybody's home alone with nothing to do. So.
Yeah, I would say that the pandemic has it's hard to find a not shitty way to say this, but I would say that the VR industry in general has been able to thrive a bit more because so many people are at home, stuck at home, and just wish they could be someplace else. You know, I've spent time just hanging out in Google Earth VR or Google VR. I don't remember the exact name of it, but basically it's you can go anywhere in the world that Google has, like photos, like Google Map photos, and you can just drop in, like, where am I at right now? Someone uploaded a photo, like a 360 photo of this, this museum, and I can feel like I'm in this museum in Azerbaijan, and that's cool. And it's been really fun. Like me and my former roommate would play this game where we would choose the capital of a country. It had to be the capital. And the other person would have to close their eyes, and then we would put the headset on them, and they couldn't look at the location. And you'd have to like travel around and like drop into different locations and guess which country capital you're in. And it was really fun. It was really cool. Yeah,
that does sound like fun.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll put the goggles back on. But no, your fans, are the VR fans a little clingier because, you know, than your regular fans because they think they're really in that environment with you, or it doesn't make a difference?
I think the VR fans and the general, like, I think that behavior is very dependent on the personality type, not necessarily the medium through which they're engaging. And so I would say it's really not a huge difference. If someone is just the kind of person who is inclined to be a very sort of someone who is maybe less aware of boundaries or who thinks that boundaries aren't for them, it doesn't matter what form they're reaching me in, they're gonna sort of have that behavior. But for the most part, my friends have been really, really cool and really, really nice. And they surprise me like a lot with just how kind they are. I'll like say some dumb self-deprecating thing about some post I make, and I'll get like 5 messages like, hey, I just want you to know, I really like it. I know that you say these things, but we really like this. We like it when you post your video blogs. We just like to hear about your day. And that sounds really cool. And it's like, oh, babies, thank you.
Well, I think
that's right. I can guess everything. Yeah.
I think Hannah might agree with me. I think it's a reflection of the performer.
Yes.
And I don't think not every performer would get those type of fans, but this is what I've been waiting for the whole time, because I'm not subscribed. What happens on your OnlyFans? What could people expect? And what can people get for their money?
So I post, like pretty much all the photos I post, I shoot myself, because we're in a pandemic. I can't really go out and shoot with people. But I do photo sets like once or twice a week, and then I'll post those photos throughout the week and then throughout the coming months, because I don't want to inundate people with the same set. So I post several photos a day. I'll post a video blog, either my underwear or topless at least, usually 2 to 3 times a week, where I just like talk about fun shit that happened in my day, or like explain the meaning behind my tattoos, or I share a funny story. You guys know the app Nextdoor?
Yes.
It's like, okay. So it's like a thing where you have to verify that you live in a specific location, and then you can engage with the people in your neighborhood.
Right.
So I was in a Buy Nothing group. No, it was on Facebook. It doesn't matter. A Buy Nothing group where it's like, hey, I have something to give if you want to come take it, because otherwise I'm going to throw it away. Or like, hey, I need this thing if anyone has it to spare. And it's this really nice way of like helping your community. Some dude posted about having like eggs, like fresh eggs, his chickens laid. And I was like, I would love some of those eggs. That sounds awesome if you have some to spare. And he messages me and he's like, hey, did you still want some eggs? And I was like, yes. And he's like, do you live in Austin? I was like, yes. And he's like, okay, what would you say to a date in exchange for some eggs? This motherfucker tried to barter a date with me for a dozen eggs.
Ew. You're like, no, I'm gonna go to the grocery store, thank you.
I could pay $7.
These are fresh eggs though.
I could pay $7 at a farmer's market. Like that's
he would fail your virtual reality dating test.
Lickety split. Yeah. So anyway, I talk about dumb shit like that and just like whatever's going on with me. And then I'll post like, you know, PPV videos that I make that are like JOI and Dommy stuff, and I don't know, just whatever strikes me in the moment. So yeah, that's kind of what I post. And I really like it. I didn't start doing it until I ended my last company. I was about to move. I was about to have this very large gap in sort of social engagement, because I wasn't going to be living with my roommate business partner anymore. We weren't working together and I didn't have my personal company to work on. So I sort of turned to OnlyFans as like a way to occupy myself. And it's just been really fun. And the people have been so nice. And it's been really good for me. Just like not like on a personal level, you know, just really good people.
That's great.
That's good.
I'm glad that you're connecting with your fans that way. I'm glad you're connecting with people in the world. I unfortunately, I'm glad. The good thing about Zoom is that you're in Austin and we can talk to you. The bad thing is I don't get to feel an Ella Darling hug. You are the best hugger in the world. There you go. Virtually.
I wish I could give you a hug, Mark. You're a very good hugger yourself.
Oh, he is.
He is, isn't he?
Because he's so warm and sweet and kind and non-threatening.
Genuine.
Yes.
Makes you feel good.
He definitely does. And he definitely loves and cares about his friends.
Very much so.
And by the way, I didn't think anybody could shut me up, but the two of you did. So keep going. So what were you going to say, Ella?
Kind and lovely. I'll text you about it. What I do want to say is, if anybody watching, listening, engaging with this, if you follow me on OnlyFans, because you found me here, if you mention the podcast name,
The Dark Mark,
The Dark Mark, I will send you a special photo set that I'm going to assemble that is me and my like gothy slut.
Scene.
So I have some that are like I have this like blood splattered background. It's just a room divider that I have in my house, but it works. So yeah, I will send you a photo set.
Yes, a special goth photo set if you mentioned the Dark Mark show.
Kind.
We'll wrap it up with that. Ella, plug everything that you have to plug.
Okay, check out Vero PlaySpace. It is on Steam. It's Vero. Just look up Vero PlaySpace. Check out Vex Ruby on Chatterbait and Cam4. Check out my OnlyFans. It's onlyfans.com/Ella Darling. I'm basically /Ella Darling on whatever social media you're into, Twitter, Insta, OnlyFans. I'm 34. That's really all I use. So, yeah. Yeah, Vero PlaySpace, Vex Ruby, and check out my OnlyFans. Mentioned the Dark Mark show and special exclusive goth slut photo set for you.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Hannah, did I tell you Elle is awesome? What did I say?
She is definitely awesome. And text her my phone number so we can get in touch next time you're in town.
Yes, I am. You know what? I'll do in a pinch.
All right, awesome.
and now follow Hannah at Hail Hannah Bach 666 on Instagram.
Uh-huh.
And also check out her other podcast, Vegans Uncensored.
Yes.
And vegansuncensored.com.
And also I'm trying to do Inked Model 2021 again. And I really means the dearest to me to get somebody that was born with a disability, that was born different, on the cover and be a cover girl and to help so out. Important. Yeah, everybody else. So you can go to my Instagram, click the link in my bio and vote for me. It would mean the world.
Hannah was in the top four of her section last year. Mm-hmm. So let's bring her to number one and go to Ella and get a gothy, slutty set of pictures and follow Goth Comedian on all social media. And everybody, have a wonderfully creepy week. Bye.
Bye. Bye, everybody. Thank you, Ella. Bye.